This is The Lucky Country, a weekly podcast brought to you by Schwartz Media, the publisher of the monthly and the Saturday paper, and Australia's first fossil fuel-free super fund, Future Super. The Saturday paper's the source of quality long-form journalism every weekend, and the monthly is the country's best magazine of politics, culture, and ideas.
I'm Richard Dennis. Thanks for joining me on The Lucky Country. More than any of the other topics I've discussed in this podcast series, the issue of violence against women is a personal and cultural problem. That's not to say that government policies can't make things better. Everything from better public transport and street lighting to school and public education in gender equality would help, as would reducing the disrespectful portrayal of women in film and media. But at its heart, violence against women is a cultural phenomenon. Too many men think that they're entitled to abuse women, and not enough men call out the behaviours that facilitate and legitimise that sense of entitlement. Violence against women, against anyone, can never be tolerated, it can never be excused, and it can never be accepted. There are no easy answers, but it's clear the worst thing we can do is to avoid these topics because they are hard. The stakes are simply too high. And it's not the kind of country that I want to live in. But unfortunately, like so many things in our society, like income, wealth, and access to housing, violence is not evenly distributed in Australia. And on average, women fare much worse than men. My first guest today is Chris Kinney, Associate Editor at the Australian newspaper. Chris, thanks for joining us on The Lucky Country.
Pleasure, Richard.
Obviously, recent events have focused Australia's attention again on violence against women and the differences, the gender differences in how as citizens men and women often behave. There's also been quite a controversy around the way the media and indeed the police talk about responsibility to make yourself safe rather than the assumption that all people should be safe. How do you think the media go in dealing with these complicated issues?
Yeah, I think they are complex issues, and I think the media has as much trouble handling them as the rest of us do in our daily lives, and indeed the police do sometimes when they're talking publicly. I think the intentions of, you know, 99% of the population are good here, and most people are just interested in ways that we can make everybody safe. There are threats to all of us as we go about our daily lives, and there are threats to us, particularly from criminals at times. But I think as a bloke, it's blindingly obvious that the threats are different for women. The threats can be more severe for women in certain circumstances. Most of the sex crimes, rape crimes, of course, are committed against women. Sure, blokes and sometimes attacked publicly, mugged or just beaten. There's the instances of one punch, king hits, this sort of thing. But these sort of sexual predators exist primarily to hunt women, and women are therefore more vulnerable. And of course, women are usually physically incapable or physically less strong than men on average, I suppose. So, you know, you find yourself sort of being careful about the language you use because you don't want to be patronising and you don't want to think that anybody carries a stronger burden than anyone else. But I think as blokes, what we need to try and do is put ourselves in the shoes of women, and that's what I've tried to do as a, you know, as a husband, as a friend of females. I don't have any daughters, but you know, as an uncle, and just as a friend, and just think about the different choices women have to make. You know, I think as a bloke, generally, as a fairly fit and strong bloke, I'm pretty relaxed about walking around the city night and day. There'll be some times when I have to check my security if I was walking through a particularly, you know, a night spot area with a lot of drunks and revelers or the like, or you know, you check yourself. But most of the time, you pretty much live your life, you know, on your own wits. Whereas if I'm a woman, would I go running through a major city parkland late in the day when the sun is about to set, or even early in the morning? Do I think about whether I should be doing that more in the cold hard light of day? Do I wait for a friend who can run with me? You know, do I walk into work and run the risk of having to walk home after sunset? You know, these are decisions that I don't think we blokes have to make so often. And I know, speaking to women in all walks of life, they do have to make those calculations all the time. I think it's tragic. I think it's unfair. And I think a starting point is for us as blokes to at least try and put ourselves in those shoes, because then we can perhaps help women, the women we know, the women we work with, manage those situations better.
You wrote about this back in 2015. I'm just quoting from an article you wrote. Imagine if just for a day or two we blokes could experience what it's like to be a woman going about her daily business, not in some place like Saudi Arabia or Iran where the discrimination is extreme, but here in our socially liberal and legislatively equal society. What was the reaction you had to writing a piece like this? Does it succeed when a bloke encourages other blokes to think about these things? What was the feedback?
It's hard to tell. I've had a lot of feedback from women saying that they appreciate that sentiment of trying to see things from their perspective, and agreeing, saying, yeah, they do think about these sorts of issues all the time. Less response from blokes, but hopefully it just pricks them to think about it from time to time as well. And you do get... I'll tell you what you do get from blokes sometimes, and this is where it gets involved in some of our modern insecurities and identity politics and the like, and that is, sometimes as a bloke, if you offer to walk a woman to her car or accompany her to the bus stop or whatever, sometimes you can get brushed off as if you're being patronising. And as I say, look, in the ideal world, then none of us should be needing to do this. But, I mean, it's something you might want to do just to show some sort of concern for your friends or relatives' safety. I mean, I hasten to add, most of the time, you have these concerns about blokes as well. And I certainly have young sons, even adult sons, and always advise them, you know, not to walk around on their own, to get a cab if they're stuck and that sort of thing. And it's not something that that of course is exclusively a concern for women, but I think we do have to be realistic. It's more of a concern for women. That doesn't mean we accept that. It means we should be doing all we can in terms of law enforcement and other issues to try and minimize the extent of violence against women. But while there is that threat, and while we recognize that women can be more vulnerable, then we've got to be a little bit more upfront and relaxed about trying to help out, I suppose, trying to help out and show that we understand those issues.
Look, coming back to your journalist hat, I mean, there's often criticism now of news outlets focusing in their headlines and their coverage on violence against women about the behaviour of women rather than the behaviour of perpetrators. As a long-term journalist, how do you see this tension? Why do you think the media often start with what the woman did rather than what the man did?
Yeah, look, I think the media get it wrong sometimes, and of course they get it right other times, and that the sort of media I'm involved in is not particularly heavy on crime reporting. But if I just look at the positive side, there are some crimes that I think the media's played a really strong role in investigating after the event, where women have been victims and the system, the judicial system or law enforcement system, has sort of left these crimes alone. It's only media pressure that has forced reinvestigation and in some cases prosecution. So I think the media and its crime reporting does a lot of good. But when it comes to these other issues, I think, yeah, sometimes it's lazy use of language, but I think it's driven more by just what the public would be concerned about, what the public thinks about. And the point is that we know if people get... we know there's a lot of violence in the home, right? We know that men and women are more likely to be victims of crime in their home than probably anywhere else. But I suppose to those people outside, those who are directly affected, that's more comforting. They feel that there's less of a threat, because if they're happy in their own home environment and safe and secure in their own home environment, then they feel that they're not as susceptible. Whereas if a crime happens in a public place, then everybody who uses that public place feels vulnerable to a degree. So then they want to know, you know, what time of day this happened. Was the person on their own? Were there any other factors that contributed to the risk here? So I think it's natural enough people will want to know that, but you've got to be very careful when you're expressing that you don't victim blame, as you say. I mean, the point is, if somebody has taken a shortcut through a park or is skirting around a park, that they should be able to do that. There's no sense that we should ever convey that the victim is therefore responsible. But I think it's natural that people want to know those instances, because simply they want to know how they can minimise their own risks, how they can deal with these issues themselves.
That's interesting. So you're saying that from a newspaper's point of view, they're thinking about the reader, and the reader wants to know, is this the kind of crime that could happen to me? Is this the sort of thing that I might be afraid of? Does that sell more newspapers, or is that just a more interesting story for people to read?
No, I think you've always got to have a mind to your audience. The point is that the journalists should always be pitching their story to their audience. What does their audience want to know? Why is the story relevant to their audience? And this is where I think, you know, crimes of passion that we know probably account for most violent crimes. Crimes of passion are newsworthy, but they're in many ways less interest to the general public, because they're not going to impact directly on them. They don't affect their own concerns or their own behaviour. But where there are random crimes committed in public places, or predators that can be seeking multiple victims in certain areas or certain places, of course there's wider public concern, and of course there's wider public interest, because people are at risk, and therefore people need to know about it. The police want to get information about the threat, and that's why the police, their first priority is public safety. So they might tell people about what they can and can't do to make themselves as safe as possible. And that's what's happened in this Melbourne incident. The police, you know, before an arrest has been made, have tried to alert the public as to what sorts of situations they should avoid. And unfortunately, be it clumsy language or clumsy reporting or a combination of both, some people have taken that as a way of victim blaming. And, you know, I'm certain that's not what anybody intended. And that's something we should try and be careful of in our language. But this is the point. People want to know if there's a predator around, be it a violent or a sexual predator or both, then the public wants to know that threat is there and what they can do to avoid it, whether it's particular areas, particular times, and particular habits.
Thank you. And look, just finally, again, you wrote about this a couple of years ago, the headline, "Timeless Blokes Stop This Violence Against Women." Yesterday, your story was about how identity politics was hijacking a tragic tale. Is violence against women a left-right issue? And how as a community do you think we might be able to thread the needle and find a bit of consensus about what needs to happen here?
Yeah, well, I think it's very complex, Richard, because there are various grades of it. I mean, I think in the case of this murder in Melbourne, a tragic Melbourne, I think it had been hijacked a bit by identity politics, that somehow all men had to wear the shame of, you know, we can't say much because before the courts, but this is the case of an alleged criminal predator preying on a stranger. I don't think all blokes should wear the shame of that. I think we all, as a community, men and women, need to try and fight against that sort of constant threat. There will always be monsters in our communities as long as humans are alive. And we always need to be alive to the ways that we can protect ourselves and watch out for it and hold to account those sorts of monsters. But I think in the broader context of, you know, domestic violence, the way women are treated in public, respect for women, and the way that can foster sort of violent language or sexist language. All blokes are in on that. We all have to be in on that. And I suppose they overlap to a degree, because it goes to the stuff I was talking about at the start, about being aware of the vulnerability that can be there for women at times, and being aware as blokes how we can make a situation a little bit less disconcerting for women, or offer company or protection if it's wanted, you know, without, again, it's always fraught because you don't want to be patronizing, but, you know, I'd like a situation where, you know, if women wanted someone to wait at the bus stop for them, they would not feel uncomfortable about asking, and that all blokes would understand that that's just a sensible thing to do. To be honest, I think we're probably more relaxed about that sort of thing 20, 30 years ago, but part of the downside of the gender politics is both men and women are a little bit sheepish about offering that sort of assistance. And I just hope that we can be a little bit more practical and, you know, leave all the issues of gender politics behind. And as humans, whether we're male or female, always offer each other a little bit of company, a little bit of assistance, particularly at night time, and so that people aren't left feeling alone in vulnerable situations.
Well, I guess the hard part for a lot of women is figuring out who they can trust to ask for help. But that said, I think a community that trusts each other a lot more and has a bit more faith in each other might feel more confident making such requests. But Chris Kenny, thank you so much for joining us on The Lucky Country.
My pleasure, Richard.
That was Chris Kenny, Associate Editor at The Australian Newspaper. My next guest is Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute. Ebony, thanks for joining us on The Lucky Country.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners have just heard two confident middle-aged blokes talking about the way the media reports on violence against women, and indeed talking a bit about, you know, how as a society we might confront these issues. What do you wish blokes knew about what women think about, and what do you wish they'd do differently?
Well, that's a good question, and I think what I really want is for men to believe women when they talk about the kind of experiences that they have of violence or verbal and physical harassment. I want them to think about kind of the maybe terrible jokes that friends of theirs have made, and not to dismiss them, but to see them as part of, I guess, the fabric of women's everyday lives, where we're just constantly on guard, waiting for something to befall us that's awful, and something that we live with every day in big and small ways. And I guess when we see these big high-profile cases of women who've been assaulted or sometimes raped and murdered, it's often that we get the advice that we should be situationally aware or avoid walking in parks, or in other ways, you know, women should change their behaviour to try and avoid being victims of male violence. And it's kind of useless information, because I think most men don't know that women do loads of things every day of their life for their own personal safety that most men wouldn't even think about.
Well, that's interesting, because you've done some research on exactly this, on the kind of behaviours that men and women undertake in order to reduce the threat of violence. Can you tell us a bit about what you found?
Yeah, it was a few years ago now, and I think it was in the wake of one of these types of cases, and we just did a quick whip around at our staff meeting and kind of asked what are the things that people do to keep themselves safe. And immediately, you know, all the women can reel off half a dozen things that they do, whether that's avoiding walking alone at night or holding their keys between their hands like a weapon. You know, there's dozens of ways that women try and keep themselves safe. And a lot of the men in the room were just kind of shocked that we did, like, even half of these things. And a lot of them wouldn't have even occurred to them to do any of them. So we wanted to do some research that kind of explored that. So we asked a bunch of Australians, what actions have you undertaken to ensure your personal safety in the last 12 months? And we included things like avoiding walking alone at night, not exercising alone after dark, a whole bunch of things. And basically, women had done one or more of these things, most women, in the past 12 months. 61% of women have avoided walking alone at night. Only 23% of men had done that. Things like 24% of women had avoided accepting drinks from strangers, and 13% of men. 33% of women had crossed the street to avoid strangers at night, only 18% of men. But what really stuck out to me was 40% of men had done none of those things, not a single one. Whereas only 13% of women had done none of those things.
Knowing me, I wasn't at that Australia Institute staff meeting, but I do remember talking to you about this at the time, and when you told me about the carrying the keys in your hand, you know, as a ready weapon, I remember being shocked, and I subsequently asked a number of women, and they all looked at me like I was an idiot for having no idea that these were the kind of things that women did. So I confess, until I talked to you about it, that I literally had no idea. The walking alone at night, yes. The avoiding jogging, probably less so. But realizing that these actions are so common, and that so many men aren't even aware of it, really, really did surprise me. What was your reaction to the research? What did you experience?
Yeah, I think any woman listening to this will
think
really
I'm an idiot.
To all of those things. But equally, I think there'll be a lot of men who are as shocked as you. And part of the other research that we did was asking women about their experiences of street harassment. And one of the many things that we found, I guess, in summary, was that overall, the perpetrators are men, and they're targeting overwhelmingly young women and while they're alone. So I think if you think about the context in which street harassment and harassment by strangers is occurring, perpetrators are specifically targeting women who are with other women or on their own. And more often than not, the perpetrators were by themselves as well. So you can see why some of this might be invisible to other men. It's because perpetrators are really making the choice about who they target and when they target them. More often than not, it's not in a big group, and it's away from other people, and they're really deliberate about their targeting. So I think that's one reason that men might not necessarily be aware of all those different things. But also I think it's because women grow up learning all those things from their mother, from their friends. I'm sure dads give this advice to their daughters all the time, and that's part of the problem. It becomes women policing their own behaviour, and the focus is very rarely on having these conversations with our sons about respectful behaviour and how we can change the behaviour of perpetrators, rather than focusing on the behaviour of women and what women can do to avoid male violence against women.
Now, Ebony, before I was talking to the journalist Chris Kenny about the way the media describes violence against women and changes that are occurring there, still admittedly a lot of room for improvement. But I happen to know that your secret superpower is that you're a television tragic and sometimes TV reviewer and podcaster yourself. How do you think the television that you like to watch so much helps or harms our cause in here? Like, how do you think the media's depiction of violence against women plays a role in this?
Well, you've got something like Game of Thrones, which is hugely popular, cultural juggernaut, and came under really severe fire pretty quickly for just basically women were constantly raped or at threat of being raped in that show, and they pretty quickly kind of had to turn around the power dynamics and start giving their female characters more agency. So I think where that's kind of been the norm in the past, we're seeing a real cultural shift, or at least a very severe backlash where that kind of lazy writing is used to often motivate male characters. We're also seeing, I think, a shift towards much more female showrunners, female writers, and female-centred shows that either explore things in a more nuanced way, something like Jessica Jones on Netflix, which really looked at the emotional and psychological toll of an abusive relationship and how that would impact on a woman in a much more nuanced way than you see elsewhere. But we're also seeing a lot more shows where that type of thing just doesn't really enter into the storytelling anymore, because I think there's been a recognition that using, I guess, violence against women in that way, normally it's done in service of motivating someone. So, you know, a bad guy rapes and murders the good guy's wife or girlfriend or family, and then, you know, he uses that as motivation to go and save the day. That's kind of seen as a lot more lazy now. So I think culturally we are shifting, and women are a lot more, I think they just turn off now. Like, it's not enjoyable to watch that kind of thing. And just one last thing I'd mention is The Handmaid's Tale, kind of was just a massive critical hit, and nearly every woman I know that watched it kind of, it was almost too awful to watch. You couldn't say you enjoyed it, but equally you couldn't turn it off. It's kind of like every woman's worst nightmare of how the world could be if we took all those sexist arguments to their logical end. So anytime I hear someone in the media talking about, oh, well, you know, women shouldn't walk home through the park after work, I just think to myself, well, what do they want us to do? Should I have a male escort? One of my male colleagues walk me to my car every night? Should I get an Uber or a taxi between the front door of my office to my car? I happen to park my car in a dark car park at night, you know, because I've got cheap parking there. Like, women just, you know, it's not practical, but also we already look out for ourselves in so many ways. But if we take that kind of advice to its logical course, then we'd be living in Saudi Arabia, where women have to be accompanied by a man everywhere, instead of focusing on how we can make Australia a safe place for women to walk around and so that they feel safe.
It reminds me of a story about Golda Meir, the former Prime Minister of Israel. There was a terrible rape and murder of a woman, and a bunch of blokes were suggesting that perhaps a curfew was required to protect the women. They should have to be home in time, you know, before dark. And she suggested, given it was the men doing the raping, perhaps the curfew should apply to blokes. And the talk of curfew ended soon after, apparently.
I bet it did.
So, Ebony, obviously, you know, some important context there about blokes actually believing women when they talk about not just the fear and the violence, but the impact of, as you said before, the jokes and the cultural references. Any final words of advice for confident middle-aged blokes like myself?
I do think it's really important to think about not only our language but our behaviour, and not only at the level of, you know, you personally, Richard, but how our institutions respond. So we've seen a big backlash to the police advising women to be situationally aware after the rape and murder of Eurydice Dixon in Melbourne. But the reason we get so angry is because you never hear that type of language when men are the victims of male violence. So if you take, for example, the King Hit deaths in King's Cross and across Sydney, when those tragic deaths happened, there was never any discussion that young men perhaps shouldn't be visiting King's Cross, or that young men should be getting home more early. Or instead, we saw a big national debate about how cowardly the perpetrators were, about how unacceptable that violence was. And Sydney changed its whole, you know, went through all the lockout laws that affected, you know, the whole of the inner city in an effort to prevent that violence. Whereas when we have these types of violent incidents, women are more often than not told to change their own behaviour. They very rarely look at what the perpetrator was doing there. Why was he out at late at night raping women, you know, and how are we going to tackle that behaviour? And one last thing I would say is I just want to throw a shout out to Jane Gilmore, who's a journalist who tracks the way that newspaper headlines describe male violence against women. And more often than not, if you look at those headlines, they talk about what the woman was wearing or where she was, how late it was, where it happened, all these things. Very rarely do they describe anything about the perpetrator. And she's made a real point of, the project is called Fix It, and she goes through and fixes all the headlines of the newspapers to really put the focus on perpetrators where it should be, and not on the behaviour or the clothing or anything else about the female victims, which I think is really important to reflect on.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Ebony. I think it sounds like the newspaper journalists and the editors themselves need to be a bit more vigilant, not just women walking home from work at night. Ebony Bennett, thank you so much for joining us on The Lucky Country.
Thanks, Richard.
That was Ebony Bennett, Australia Institute Deputy Director. Well, thanks for joining us on The Lucky Country. The Lucky Country was brought to you by Schwartz Media, publisher of The Monthly and The Saturday Paper, and Future Super, Australia's first fossil fuel-free super fund.